Well, folks, welcome back to the podcast. What is the crack? Today's crack comes from Aaron Schwann. He is the senior pre-construction manager at Consigli in Boston. Now, Aaron's background is quite varied. He was a psychology graduate from the George Washington University. After that, early 20s, went and did a few different jobs. Got a job with a cabinetry maker, designing cabinetry, doing projects from 50K to 100K. Loved the whole working with your hands and seeing how things went together. After that, he went to John Moriarty, stayed there for 5 years, had a fantastic training and development with John Moriarty, some great lessons learned there. Then he went to Consigli, where he's been for the last 2.5 years. But there's three things that stand out with Aaron Schwann. One is his passion for data, pre-construction data. He talks in great detail about the penny dropping at John Moriarty and how he's continued that with Consigli and now has helped develop a proprietary model, live cost model that Consigli use. And by the way, they can get within 1 or 2% of a lab project in Boston. Incredible. And fair play to Aaron. He talks in detail about how they went and did that. After that, he talks about the dynamics of the relationship with the subcontractors. He then talks about how the industry as a whole has been exposed by COVID. But listen, before we hear from Aaron, let's hear from our main sponsor, Concentric, and their CEO and founder, Steve Dillard.
Hi, I'm Steve DeLordo, founder and CEO of Concentric, the first holistic platform for pre-construction. As a former executive officer of one of the largest general contractors in the U.S., I have experienced firsthand the challenges the industry is facing, particularly in pre-construction. Pre-construction is still a highly manual and fractured collection of processes. Essential information is kept in ad hoc, scattered spreadsheets and documents, which really limits the understanding and hides the full picture of a project for all those involved. Concentric is here to change that. Our 360-degree platform unites data, workflows, and people. With Concentric, you and your team can access real-time insights and data, assess and mitigate risk to ensure a successful project outcome, and most importantly, unlock the enormous capacity of your talent and your data. To learn more about Concentric and to book a demo, head to our website, concentric.com. That's spelled concentric.com. Concentric, it's pre-construction recalibrated for the modern builder.
Aaron Schwann, welcome to the Pre-Construction Podcast.
Hey, Gareth, how you doing?
Love the background. Consigli red, loud and proud.
Yeah, that's how we do it. That's how we do it.
Good. Okay, folks, we've got Aaron Schwann here, Senior Pre-Construction Manager at Consigli. He's up in Boston and he's got a lot to talk about. Young, high-performing pre-construction professional. Aaron, rather than me tell people about you, give us a quick idea of your background and how you came into this wonderful world of pre-construction.
So, I'm happy to do that. So, you know, as a kid, I always loved working with my hands. I always liked being in construction. I had very focused parents who were really pushing me to get an education, pushing me to go to college and school and get a degree. And despite their efforts, it drove me back to construction, which is where my first love was, putting things together. So that's a little, you know, so I went to school at GW, George Washington University for college. And then funny enough, I know you like this, Gareth, but I got a psychology degree there. I think people are always so, they said, oh, what are you, an engineer? I said, no, I just play one in real life. And, you know, I got a psychology degree at GW and it's funny enough, but I probably didn't use it at all during my 20s. But I seem to use it every single day. And after going to school, I basically wandered around my 20s for a little bit trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And it took me about 4 or 5 years to figure out that I really wanted to be in construction. So I went back to my first love and I started actually working in a custom cabinet shop up in the northern part of Massachusetts. Started by sweeping the floors at the sanding table, And then working my way up through the shop of running small work, smaller, you know, $50,000 to $100,000 cabinet jobs through there. And I just wanted a little more. So I made the move to the dark side, to commercial construction, and started at JMA, John Moriarty and Associates, a great company here based in Boston. Got my education there and my re-education into commercial construction and purchasing during the big housing and condo boom in the city. And toward the tail end of my my job there, we really started getting into the lab science world. And that's where the final dot kind of came into place, which was data and breaking big complicated things into small component parts. So I always thought that there's no way that these projects can be ridiculously, they are very complicated, and they are. There's no denying that they are, but they can really be, from a planning standpoint, broken out into 6 to 10 pieces. And how do we define what those things are? How do we quantify them? And then from there, how do we bring that vision to an owner, communicate it with them, and help them bring out their vision for the job? So it's sort of, I don't know, I did one thing, I did another thing, and then all of a sudden, a couple of years ago, it just kind of came together. So,
Aaron, there is absolutely no doubt in my mind, your careers teacher should have been able to listen to you talk and say you are an engineer. Listening to your talking is just, I mean, obviously going into the cabinetry would have helped, because it would have been able to show you the real small details and the importance of those small details when considering the wider project. Now, psychology, amazing. Amazing that you were able to do psychology with the engineering thought process behind it. And trust me now, every pre-construction manager, estimator in the US wishes they'd done psychology, because the last 2 or 3 years they would have needed that degree. But it's amazing your path and how it's led you to this, and how it's led you into pre-construction and estimating as well. So let's talk about the data side of things, because you talked about John Moriarty there. Again, you're 100% right. Fantastic company. Mike Levitt and the team over there, great, great guys. You then went to Consigli, but more on the lab side. Tell me when throughout your process and your learning and development, did the light bulb go on and say, you know what, we're not focusing on this enough, and this is the most important thing when it comes to estimating and pre-construction?
And so what started was when I was estimating at John Moriarty, JMA, we spent a lot of time doing detailed estimates for lots of different clients throughout the cycle: schematic design, design development, construction, document development. And I began to question, why don't we have a database for all this information? Why don't we have a database of how much a linear foot of this pipe costs? What was great about JMA was they were very focused on relationships with the subcontractor market. And so you learned a lot from those subcontractors of how they thought about the job, how they broke the job down into component pieces. And I said, geez, if they're breaking it down into that kind of piecemeal process, then I should be able to do the same thing. And so on the side, while I was doing estimates, I would start to read design criteria of projects, and I would start to correlate the design criteria with cost per square foot or whatever the metric was that worked for us. And I would start to bring it into owners when I was able to start presenting. And JMA doesn't really have a pre-con in the sense of like a dedicated pre-con department. Everybody's kind of a part of pre-con. And I would walk in and I would say to engineers, you know, not for nothing, I'm not a mechanical engineer, but I looked at the design criteria of four other buildings that are of a similar type in a similar part of market, and I'm noticing that these two or three factors have changed or are different. Why is that? And a lot of times you'd get really great insight into, oh, the code has changed, or you'd catch some people saying, well, you know, this is us trying to put our stamp on this job to differentiate us from these other, from the market. And so there was an education process. And one time when I saw a engineer say, how did you even know to look there? It kind of, a light bulb went off in my head to say, geez, I wonder if we can break these jobs down into smaller component pieces. And if we start with the design criteria and we leverage the subcontractor pricing, we can start to create metrics that we can use across jobs. And another thing that I learned there as well was, especially we did almost exclusively private developer work. And that's where I've transitioned to Consigli. Consigli for a lot of folks is a educational builder. They build a lot. They do a lot of historical restoration, high schools. But a lot of people don't know that Consigli started a Boston office 10 years ago that was completely dedicated to developer work and private work. and so what happened was at JMA, I said, you know, geez, we should start breaking these things out into component pieces. And, you know, again, when I was over there in Winchester, they were very focused on maintaining the existing relationships, working with private clients, and they weren't necessarily focused on the data per se because they had such good relationships with subcontractors. And I said, you know, there's got to be a category of developers who really want this data and this information broken down in a manageable size. And so Consigli, when they approached me, was very interested in that and has always been focused in data and metrics. And that kind of lent itself to me moving over there, was bringing the estimating, purchasing, analytical process to Consigli and developing these processes. And I'm happy to say that, you know, it wasn't just a side hustle anymore. The majority of my job now is focused on building a live cost model that we use internally at Consigli. And, you know, we talk about lab science or, you know, lab office and research and development facilities. And we have a model, excluding escalation, that's basically within 1-2% of where the final project's going to be. And so owners say, well, your price is high. I said, no, I have your design contingency in it already. You know, and right, I know where this is going to end up in 6 to 9 months, because we've done six of them and we've tracked each of the jobs the same way. And, you know, not for nothing, like, you guys are special, but your building really isn't. So, you know, it's helping people understand that, right, of how the pieces work together. So it all kind of came together a few years ago. And the psychology piece of it is interesting is, you know, you have a way of thinking and then you have to communicate that to someone. You have to speak, whatever my wife says is whatever, speak into their listening. Like you have to basically translate it into a way that makes sense for them, right? Yeah. So anyways, the long and short of it is that's kind of the background. And my pride and joy of Consigli now is this live data cost model and kind of getting our systems internally to think in this sort of allocated way.
So I have a picture in my head, Aaron, of all the estimators and pre-construction folks out for their weekend jog, listening to this and falling over themselves, listening to you saying you can get within 1-2% of a project. That is incredible. Now, we talked off air a little bit about this, but I want to dig down into it a little bit more. It's all well and good getting to within 4 or 5%, and even that is incredible in this day and age when you think about escalation and price fluctuations. But what is the step? How do you get from 5% to 1 or 2%? Is it more data points?
Yeah. So you and I were talking about this before, which is, you know, everybody wants the minimum number of points. They want to be able to put in 5 points: location, building type, number of floors, square footage, use, client type, and they want you to be able to put it into a machine and tell you how much it's going to cost. And historically that works. Like historically it's worked, right, to get you within 50 or 100 bucks a square foot of what your overall project's going to be. But as you and I were talking about, with interest rates going up, rents flattening, construction costs continuing to increase, every single one of those factors is really important. And construction costs, especially being 70 to 80% of the cost of an entire development project, you have to be better than plus or minus 5%. You have to be better, because these jobs are so razor thin in terms of the margins that you have to give them that granularity to give people a path to move forward. Otherwise, they're just stuck. They're just stuck in that in there. And so anyways, we developed this process to help them get better. And so instead of 5 factors, give me 25. Don't give me a hundred. You can give me 100 if you want. If you give me 100, that's great. But give me 25 factors. What kind of facade do you have? What's the mixture of the facade? Is it unitized or not? What kind of structural system are you evaluating? And we take the projects and we break them. This isn't a secret. A lot of people break the above grade portion and the below grade portion and the site constraints. And you break these into component parts. And so while my life has been almost exclusively research and development. We're starting to look into residential now. Everyone's like, oh, it's a completely different type of building. And I said, not really. It has a structure, it has a basement, it has a site, it has, yes, there are specific things that change, but I can feel certain that without knowing anything about your building, 40 to 50% of the cost I know is a fixed cost that regardless of the project type, we know what it's going to be. We know what the options are going to be for you. So it's been an education of not only telling developers, listen, give me 25 inputs, architect, give me 25 inputs and I can get within that. But it's also been on the back end, convincing people internally of breaking things down into that granularity, into its bite, into its sort of like chewable pieces, right? Yeah. And so that's been the other focus of the other focus that we've been working on as well internally with Consigli.
So Aaron, so there, I'm going to break those two up, right? About asking the architects and the designers for an extra 15 or 25 points. How do you get pushback from them on that? Or is it like, because that's obviously extra work. Are you able to, now obviously, and we're going to go into this at a further stage in this podcast episode is communication, but how do you communicate that to be able to say, listen, this is the value that you're going to give me and this is the value I'm going to give you back just by giving you those extra points?
What's interesting is I think people are shocked by it. I think depending on the relationship, folks are not used to construction managers being so active in the conversation. You're sort of there as a consultant and a reference point. You know, how much does that cost? Is it going to be more expensive than that? How does that affect schedule? You know, these are all very important questions, but we go in and we question the basic tenets of a design. I mean, designers don't necessarily like that you're questioning what they're doing, but owners, I don't know, it takes a little bit of a process and finesse of saying, yeah, you know, I think, yes, this is very interesting and blah, 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 but you know, give me these 5 or 10 more things and really just pushing an owner. And an owner says, no, we're not ready to commit. And I'll say, well, if I don't have these 5 pieces of information, you know, the range of the price is going to, and the schedule is going to go from here to here. Well, that's not good enough. Okay. Well, if it's not good enough, then just help me out a little bit and I can help you push this process along. So it is a process because, like I said, folks are not used to construction managers hopping in and being very active in that process. But we kind of have to be now because, like I said, if a project's up 2 or 3%, I mean, we've had jobs that were ready to GMP, we're about to sign on the dotted line, they go back to their financing and their financing said, the 5% you said before was too high, and now you've got another 2%. This project's done. And there's nothing you can do about it. Whereas when you start in the beginning, you know, as you get further along the process, you have less influence, but at the beginning you have a lot. So it's taken a little while for folks to get used to our style.
I think this comes back to another point that we discussed as well, Aaron, is that the whole risk side of pre-construction services is if they're happy enough to give you all the risk, surely they're happy to give you all the information to help you reduce that risk.
Well, yeah. And the other thing too, Gareth, is like a lot of folks don't necessarily know what they want. So there's a very interesting thing that's happening in the Boston market in Massachusetts specifically. I'll just give you a small story is there's a confluence of research and development, lab, you know, lab buildings, biotech buildings used to be a niche. It used to be a niche market. It used to be a small portion, you know, commercial was always big, rental was always big. You had institutional stuff outside the city, but all of a sudden with COVID and the COVID vaccines and people just opened their eyes to mRNA technology, they started to getting to lab research and development. That became the speculative market. And in the speculative market, you had all the same pressures that you had in the commercial market. Who has the most sustainable building? Who's prepared for climate change? How are you addressing the work-life balance that people have now within a post-COVID world? And so what happened was lab and research became mainstream, but you still had all this sort of commercial pressure. And the reason what's hard is you have, in addition to that, you have regulatory bodies like the International Building Code and the state code that are now enforcing you to be closer to all electric. And the point is, there's now three or four factors that are converging together on a single market. And you have to sort out for people, what is code? What did we do 2 years ago? Where is the market going? How do we attract tenants? And what am I going to be forced to do from a code perspective in the next 5 to 10 years? And so there's just a lot more information that, and again, people might go pre-con, might go 2 years before doing pre-con again as a developer, right? You're in the job, you're building the job, you haven't been there in 2 years. Like, a lot's happened in 2 years. People are like, it can't have moved that fast. And the answer is it has. So it's our job to basically break that down into bite-sized pieces so people understand the story, and then they understand the path of what you can control, and then they can understand what everybody else is doing in the market, and then you can address, okay, what's the cost around that and the implications around that. So anyways, that's really what we've been focused on.
I love that, Aaron. I mean, if anybody, any junior, mid-level pre-construction professionals listening to this, this is the sort of practical, logical, collaborative communication that needs to happen between yourself, the architect, and the owner. And unfortunately, I feel that too many people, too many contractors are missing out on the collaboration, the asking questions, the putting back. There's two words that you should use most, and I've put this out to speaking to a lot of people, is why and no. You've got to push back, start pushing back and saying, no, we can't do that until you give us this. And then you say, why do you want it like this? But that's a brilliant kind of method or ideology to use. And it comes back as well to the communications side. Mm. It is becoming so important. Aaron, are you seeing it? I mean, you started out at John Moriarty as a construction estimator. How much has that changed compared to an estimator sitting in a corner crunching numbers and throwing it to a developer and hoping it sticks?
I think there's pressure everywhere. So before, you used to be able to produce an estimate, you used to be able to communicate that estimate to whoever the pre-con leader was. You could tell them from a reconciliation standpoint of what changed, why it changed, what quantities changed. And it's very straightforward, right? But now you have factors that you could never have even dreamed of, where estimators try to communicate information about why a price goes up. And they say, listen, I even talked to a sub and they don't understand why it went up, right? There's escalation, there's quantity increases, and then there's the sort of nobody really knows market feedback, right? Like, nobody understands why vendors are still increasing their prices, because it's not commodities, it's not quantity, it's not lead time. There's just this factor that's going on there. And so what happened was estimators have to do a better job, because they've got to convince folks like myself and project executives. Like, the first thing we say is that can't possibly be, that there's no way that went up that much. How am I going to communicate that to an owner when I don't even understand it? And so what's happened is estimators have had to start communicating better internally, right? Which means that we get fed the information to be able to communicate it to an owner. And now you're saying, listen, estimator, why don't you come to the meeting with me? Because I can't even explain this, yeah. Right? So it then becomes this process where everybody has to be knowledgeable about everything that's going on and being able to communicate it, right? And so you sometimes, as a pre-con manager, are the only voice. And when someone's giving you bad news, you need to hear it from four people to believe it, right? And so you're sort of forced to bring people into a conversation that they weren't necessarily a part of before, just to kind of back you up, right? To kind of back up the assumptions. And so I've seen that shift. So
yeah, the beautiful thing about that, Aaron, and again, it's the same with the client, whether it's internal communication or external communication, is if you've got the data at hand to back up what you're saying, then it becomes much easier.
Yeah. So for instance, I'm about to deliver some news to a client today about an update for their pro forma for a concept estimate, and it's going to be higher than what they think, but it's going to be lower than what the market is. And I'm going to have, you know, four or five different projects that are the same size, that have the same criteria, that are the same use, that are roughly in the same market. And I'm going to say, you can argue with me all you want about, you think I'm being too conservative, but the numbers don't lie. I mean, these are buy numbers. These are GMP numbers. Like, it doesn't get any better than that. And so, you know, that's been hard to communicate to people. Is the only way you can communicate with someone really bad news is to give them information, give them the information in a way that makes sense to them. And that's numbers.
Yeah.
Numbers and data.
But Aaron, what has happened as well, it has given all general contractors and construction management firms a kick up the arse, because people who were lazy before that, relying on their subs, picking numbers out of their over their head, or out of their arse, as I say, you've got to go and do the basic information. You've got to go and do the pre-construction properly. You've got to spend time with it. You've got to get your data in check, and then deliver to the client. And I think what has happened, and we've talked about this, there's certain companies in the market that are so far ahead of other construction firms, construction management firms, that, to be honest with you, between COVID and now, which is going three years, if you haven't picked up on that, on the play of data, then you're probably going to go out of existence.
Yeah, and I think it's not that you're going to go out of existence, is that the greatest factor right now, like, developers are getting savvier, everyone's getting smarter, and everyone's getting more intelligent in terms of the information that they're receiving. And years ago, used to be, you know, if you have a general contractor at your home, how do you know if they're good or not? You kind of go through an experience with them, right? Are they communicating information to you? How are they communicating it? How did the price change over the job? You don't really know until you go through it. And pre-con, in terms of the part of the project, is like, you know, a year of a 4-year project. And a lot of times people forget pre-con because you had this whole project that you built. The problem now is that you have developers who are moving into different market segments because of the financials, right? You have housing builders now moving into lab. We've had a bunch of clients like that. You've had commercial folks who are moving into lab, or vice versa, or having to build housing. And they can't rely on the, well, this person's going to take care of me. You know, like, they can't rely on that. They need to know before. It's not just about how you're going to build it. It's about what steps did you take as a team beforehand to assure that it worked from a budget standpoint. And then we do our great work in the field, like we always have done. Right. And then, oh, I love working with Consigli. I love working, you know, we love working with these guys because they give you X. Yeah. The biggest complaint that we've heard from clients is from pre-con. You guys didn't give us the cost certainty that we needed. We were hit with changes that we weren't expecting to have. Why didn't we, you know, and Consigli has this whole raving fans survey system that we use, where we ask clients at different parts of the job how we're doing. We ask consultants, we ask architects, we ask the owner. And the biggest feedback is, you didn't explain to us how the decisions we made here affected us here. Mm-hmm. And so that it was kind of a light bulb to us to say, well, we have to understand it ourselves in order to communicate it back to these folks at an earlier portion.
Brilliant. But not only that, and that comes back to the first conversation you had about John McCarthy, about the relationship they had with their subs. Surely the work that you do in the forefront on the pre-construction side with the client and the architect and the designer, getting it within that, you can then relay that to your subcontractors, who then must absolutely love working with Consigli, because they know exactly what the number is and they know exactly how to deliver it.
Yeah, exactly. And we've done things now where, and I want to actually emphasize how important the subcontractor market is that one of the things that I think we didn't do such a great job of at Consigli a few years ago was relying on the sub market. We lived too much in the theoretical of how much it should cost and how much it would cost. And what we did was we harnessed those relationships. We're starting to get, you know, we'll work with anybody. We'll work with anyone. We have a very wide net. But specifically in the lab research market, we started to get a little bit more selective about understanding each company's capabilities. Peter Capone, who heads our purchasing, does a lot of conversations with company. What's your backlog? What kind of work is the type of work you want to do? When do you have a need? What's the profile of a project that works for you? And we've started to feed that information into how we plan jobs. And so when we have a job where we're in DDs or SDs and we say, hey, we need feedback on HVAC, we'll have an internal conversation. Didn't so-and-so just have a conversation with X subcontractor? Let's bring them in for budgeting early. And then let's communicate with them, guys. What are the five factors there that make this job different than the other projects that you're working on? What are you seeing that concerns you? And feeding that information back into our cost model and feeding that information back to how we talk to the owner. So subs have been immensely helpful, and COVID laid bare everyone's business practices, because you couldn't mark everything up 15% anymore when the price doubled for a material, because it just wasn't going to work from an economic standpoint. So folks were relying on us to communicate to them where they were in the market. They were telling us the four or five things we needed to change or focus on in order to capture that risk. And then we were feeding that information back to the subs. So all of that leads to predictability and cost and subcontractor coverage. And so it's this multidisciplinary feedback loop that just everything feeds each other. And you're always kind of questioning everyone. You're questioning yourself. You're questioning your estimators. You're questioning your subs. You're questioning the owner. You're questioning the architect. And by bringing all that information and data together, then as a group, you make a decision based on all of those different parts and pieces. Absolutely. And that, I think, is not, people look at construction managers as estimators. Tell me how much this costs and how long it takes. It's like, I'm putting you on the map. Like, I'm pressing you, owner, and I'm pressing you. If you do this, this is what it's going to push you into. I can't help you if you do that. And that's hard for people to hear. It's really hard for people to listen to.
Just as well, you've got a psychology degree.
I tell you, it's hard. It's very hard. I mean, you have to really focus on what everyone has different needs and what they're looking for. And you really have to hone in on what do they want. It's not about what they want to hear, but what do they need to make an informed decision? I think that's a problem that a lot of folks make, is that they say, oh, what do they want to hear? It's like, no. What do they need to hear? And how do you empower them to make a decision about the information that you have?
Yeah, but I think that's like what they tell them, what they want to hear. That you cannot do that anymore. There's too much risk involved. It's gone now. Maybe 10 years ago, you might've got away with it, and you might've been able to kind of maybe scrape on the operation side. They might've been able to scrape maybe $500,000 back, but that is not possible anymore.
Yeah, and it's all about transparency. You have to say, listen, we'll go on this journey with you. We'll say we think we can get buyout. We think we can get aggressive pricing, but that's a decision we're making. That's not a decision that Consigli's making. The team is making this decision together to take the risk. And if it works, we all benefit. And if it doesn't work, we all get hurt. So that's the other thing too, is that there's been a big effort on our side. And I don't know that Jared LaChapelle at Consigli, who runs our estimating and pre-con department corporately, would say is we need to do a better job communicating to clients what their responsibilities are in this process. And I think it shocks people sometimes, and obviously we do it very diplomatically. I think it shocks people when we come in and say, yeah, listen, we'll do whatever you want, but we're going to lay the whole thing out for you, and we're going to come to a decision together, and you're not going to put this all on me. It's going to be on the team. Absolutely. And so anyways, that's to your point. That's the fun part, but that's the most fun part.
But not only that, it's a much more enjoyable journey when everyone knows exactly where they stand. Everyone's completely transparent and open and honest. Because at the end of the day, like, construction is a hell of a stressful industry. And I mean, the more we can talk together and talk about it, the more we can ease the pressure on everyone.
Absolutely. Yeah, and the fun part too is the code switching. I was talking to you about this before. I mean, you know, we talk with subcontractors who might not have as much education as I do, but they're a lot smarter than I am. They're a lot street smarter. They understand business a lot better than I do. They understand the factors of how to make things work, about how to position themselves in a market, very educated. So there's also this process of trying to teach people that you can learn something from anyone, and you should be learning something from every person you talk to, from an estimator. You know, you learn a lot from estimators. Well, you didn't give me these three pieces of information, so it sent me off into a tailspin for 4 days. Okay, well, that means you need to ask me the right question at the right time, but I also need to provide you the information and the direction as quickly as you can. So there's a whole there's this whole symbiotic relationship that goes on with people where you depend on everybody else to feed you information and to kind of to move it along. So that's the fun part. That's the psychology part, right?
Big time. But I tell you what, you've hit it on the nail on the head there. Now, you think about your career, Aaron, right? You were in a cabinetry. Yeah. You were working in cabinetry, churning out 50,000, 100,000 jobs. You understand that. People don't understand the importance of the trades and what they can teach us, especially if you go up the charts. So if you start with the trades, you talk to the subcontractors, they talk to the GC, the owners, the architects, the designers. It's so important the information from the bottom gets communicated all the way up the top. And the only way we can do that is if we get them in earlier.
Yeah, I can't say I'm disappointed. Like, you know, my journey is my journey. Like, you know, I wouldn't trade it for anything, you know. I also think if I had literally, you know, so I do think people are pushed away from trade work and people are pushed away from a really good living, a quality living. I mean, I think that the thing that I really always enjoy about working with subcontractors when you talk to people in the field is there's like a brotherhood there. You're part of a team. You're part of something that's bigger than yourself. And, you know, you're a cog in a machine, but you're an important cog. And I think people don't realize the importance of that and the value that brings to people's lives. I'm not saying trade work is hard, man. Those men and women work a lot harder than I do physically. And your body is your tool, right? Like those are your tools is your body. Like that's hard to convince someone to get up every day at 5 o'clock in the morning, do the same thing every day. But I've never had more gratifying work in my life than when I worked on an irrigation crew in the desert and I worked 12-hour days, 6 days a week.
Yeah.
You know, I've never had more gratifying work in my life.
I think that the skills that they have as well. I mean, I would love to be able to use my hands to build something. And I think a lot of people would like to do that. But these guys that are gifted that, we have got to respect them. We've got to put them on a pedestal, especially in high school. And know how important they are to the overall arching of the buildings, how big they are, how spacious they are, how safe they are. I mean, it's all down to these guys.
Yeah, and the other thing that we've been trying to say as well at Consigli and has always been my focus is we get the privilege of working with great subcontractors. We get the privilege. It's not the other way around. It's not, you know, you guys are lucky enough to work with Consigli. It's the other way around. We're lucky enough to be able to get you as part of our team. And I think when you start to think that way, you start to respect people more in terms of the knowledge that they have. I haven't built anything since I left the cabinetry. I mean, you know, at my house or whatever, but I haven't built a single thing. I've worked on a lot of projects. I haven't done a single thing. And it's these men and women who go out every single day and use their bodies and put their time and energy into it and give us that information and that feedback that makes our job. Our model is only as good as the information they provide, right? And so we have to respect that whole process. And I do think that there's a valuable career path for people who want to do that. And it's funny, speaking of GW, I all of a sudden, a few months ago, started to get people would reach out to me, GW students who were juniors and seniors who had majored in business or something else. And guys said, how did you get in construction? I've always loved construction. How did you transition from your degree at GW? How can I get into construction? Because that's really where I want to be. How do I do this in a way that my parents don't want to kill me? You know, and I've had three or four people that we found opportunities for, either Consigli or other places, of getting them into the trades. You know, I talked to a young man and he said, yeah, you know, whatever. I said, you sound like a guy who doesn't want to be in school anymore and wants to be working with his hands. He said, yeah. I said, you're having a hard time telling your parents about that. He said, yeah. I said, well, I tell you what, you got to have that conversation now because you're going to be regretting it for the rest of your life. And everything they're worried about, job security and things like that, you can get that in the trades. You can get that as being a part of that. So well, I encourage people.
I have to say, Aaron, that's a great message to finish on because we did a podcast recently with Bob Kovacs and he talks about who's responsible for more people into the skills trade. And it's us, it's me, it's you, it's people in the construction industry talking about construction, talking about how sexy it is, talking about how innovative it is, how satisfying it is. That's what we got to do. It's up to me, you, and everyone else listening. So that's a brilliant way to finish it. Aaron, I want to say thank you very much because this has been terribly insightful. And I know we're going to get a lot of good feedback, especially around the data segment at the start.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity.
Hey folks, just a quick reminder about Advancing Pre-Construction 2023. It's happening in Phoenix, Arizona. It's happening on May 24th to May 26th. Now, if you're interested in going, it's the biggest and largest gathering of pre-con and estimating professionals. I'll be there and a lot of my guests will be there as well. If you're thinking about going, get over to the website, simply Google Advancing Pre-Construction. During the checkout, simply put in podcast 10 to get a 10% discount. There's also early registration discounts as well.
Aaron Schwamm, Senior Pre-Con Manager at Consigli in Boston. It's question time. First question, favorite project?
Probably the Sanofi fit out, their new world headquarters over at Divco West. It's really complicated.
Brilliant. And what about biggest lesson learned in construction so far?
You're nothing without your subcontractors.
Good. Yeah, we talked a lot about that during the main episode there. Anybody hasn't listened to it, go back and listen again. Third question, how do you relax, Aaron? How do you de-stress?
So I'll tell you a funny story. If anybody knows Kobayashi, who used to eat, there was the hot dog eating competition at Nathan's.
Yeah.
He just finished eating like 65 hot dogs. And he said, someone says, what do you want to eat? And he says, a hot dog. And I feel like I'm the same way. The way I relax is I find little projects that I can break apart and think through how I'm going to build them in my house. So I've spent a lot of time with my brother. So it's more of the same. I have a passion for it.
No, this comes back to you're an engineer at heart.
Probably.
Right. Quick one. Favorite food?
Favorite food, probably French fries.
Brilliant. Favorite sports team?
Probably the Patriots.
Love it. What about biggest influence in your career so far? You can give a couple of people, a couple of mentors maybe.
I'd say John Moriarty himself was very, very important in my career. Andrew Hall over at JMA, and then Consigli, I'd say Chris Garvalis, Matt McCullough.
Brilliant, love it. Last one, we're in Boston for the weekend. Where are you taking me for a bite to eat? Favorite eatery, favorite pub?
Favorite place to eat? I'd probably take you off the beaten path, and I would take you to a place called Sarma in Somerville, which is just right outside of Boston.
There you are, folks. Next time you're in Boston, that's where you're going. Aaron, you've been an absolute pleasure.
You as well, Gareth. Nice to meet you.
Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that deep dive into pre-construction data. Incredible story about what Aaron's doing with Consigli and pre-con data. And it just goes to show when your client is looking for a tighter budget, you can get it within 1% or 2%, but you need that data. You need the quantifiables to be able to go to the client, talk them through, almost become a storyteller, and talk them through how you're going to do it. As always, any questions for Aaron, his LinkedIn profile is in the show notes. Hit him up. He will answer any questions. Really, really nice guy. As always, thank you for your support and stay tuned for more amazing episodes on the Pre-Construction Podcast.